So as some of you know, I'm the editor of Creative Thought magazine, and a while back I was working on the October issue of the magazine, so I'm always living in the future. But our president of ICSL, Dr. Ken Gordon, who most of you know because he's visited us on a few occasions, in his article he shared a story of Raymond Charles Barker. So I'm going to steal that and tell it to you this morning to illustrate a point. So the story goes that Dr. Barker was sitting in his office in New York City, and a woman he had never seen before just burst in the door, ran across his office, slapped a $100 bill on his desk, and said, "Get me a man." She knew what she wanted, and she got it. Exactly a year later, she reappears. She busts in, hands him another $100, and says, "Now, get rid of him." So the moral of the story is what? A girl has the right to change her mind. Actually, we all have the right to change our minds. Everybody, male, female, it doesn't matter. And not in a flighty way, like trading in our significant others like we trade in cars. But we want things, don't we? And we want to grow and we want to expand. So whatever we want, whether it's a new car, a new job, a new house, a new man, an old man, it works for me. Hey, what can I say? Whatever it is, it begins in mind. Now, as metaphysicians, we know it's not enough simply to change our minds. We have to consciously change our thought. And today, what I want to talk about is the ever-changing nature of thought from an evolutionary standpoint. And I'm going to make the claim, so I want you to pay attention. I'm going to make the claim that at any given moment, whatever we are experiencing is already on the brink of extinction. Now, don't get scared, not yet, okay? Perhaps you're familiar with the idea of dying unto this moment in order to live in the next. How many of you have heard that expression before? Right. So it's a very mystical concept, and it has to do with present moment awareness. It's a more immediate or a more radical expression of the idea of letting go of the past and living in the now. A more urgent expression, if you will. And it requires a willingness on our part to abandon everything that has gone before, everything that has happened right up to this moment, and just allow that to become extinct. Now, extinction can be a scary word. And what I normally do, because I'm a word person, but when I hear words that scare me, I try to think about their opposites, and then I feel so much happier. So the opposite, or one of the antonyms for extinction, is survival. And what have we been taught about survival? In the world as we know it, who survives? The fittest, absolutely. Everybody got the right answer. And when you think about the survival of the fittest, whose name immediately springs into your mind? Darwin. I love Charles Darwin. I love the bumper sticker that says, "When evolution is outlawed, only outlaws will evolve." But let's go back in time a little bit and see if Darwin can inform our understanding of our own teaching, of our science of mind philosophy. In 1825, Darwin entered Edinburgh University as a medical student. Now, for those of you who are Troward fans, I'll put this in a temporal perspective. That was about 80 years before Troward's Edinburgh lectures were delivered, so it was a long time ago. But he dropped out of medical school the second year because he wanted to study natural history. And over the course of his studies, and he was a brilliant student, but he explored marine biology, botany, and geology. In 1931, he joined the second voyage of the HMS Beagle, and he went along under the auspices of being a geologist and a fossil collector. Now, a few years later in 1935, when the Beagle reached the Galapagos, Darwin was so excited. He had hoped to see newly forming volcanic islands, but he was very disappointed. There was nothing like that for him to observe. But he did observe the fauna, and he saw that there were mockingbirds on the Galapagos that looked very much like mockingbirds he had seen on the South American continent in Chile. And he thought, okay, they're very similar, but they're a little bit different. So as their voyage continued throughout the islands, he continued to observe mockingbirds that were very similar, but they had certain variations that stood out. So Darwin's observations led him to conclude that variety exists within species. and it stems from the need to adapt to a particular environment. In the case of the mockingbirds, their beaks vary according to food sources on their particular island. Ultimately, what happened is that Darwin articulated a theory, and most of you have heard it, but part of it basically states that individuals less suited to an environment are less likely to survive, and individuals more suited to an environment are more likely to survive. So for purposes of today's lecture, the individuals we're talking about are our thoughts, and the environment we're talking about is the law of mind. The thoughts we think that are less suited to the environment of divine mind are less likely to survive, and vice versa. So what we want to do is create viable thoughts. What does it mean for our individual thoughts to be well suited to the environment of divine mind? More than anything, they need to be fresh. They need to be current. They need to be alive. They need to be happening right now. See, my central claim is that the thoughts we had yesterday are not good enough for today. The thoughts we had yesterday are already obsolete. They're extinct. They are not good enough for today. Now, in order to survive to manifestation, our thoughts have to continue to evolve. And evolution implies progress, doesn't it? Evolution, just the mere word, suggests growth. And growth is always taking place, no matter what. Whether we see it or not, whether we're aware of it or acknowledge it, it's always taking place. Those of you who've been to our house know that Jay and I have magnificent roses in our garden. They're just beautiful. And I wish I could take credit for them, but I can't, alas, because they were already there when we moved in. But I do enjoy them, and they're just gorgeous. And every once in a while, Jay and Kai will come in from the yard, and they'll bring me one rose. Out of the hundreds in bloom, they bring me one rose. I don't know why. And what Jay does is he'll cut it off about an inch below the bud. He say, here, let's go take mommy a rose. Kai is my dog, for those of you who don't know. So it makes it really hard to put it in a vase, but not only that, it's not good for the plant, right? Now, when I cut roses, I cut multitudes of roses, and I do it the exact right way. A little bit on an angle, right? Slightly above the first five leaf growth. Yeah, okay, I know what I'm doing. But even though I'm horrified at how Jay cuts the roses and that he only cuts one, I do appreciate the gesture because the thought does count. And let me tell you what's even more horrifying. Earlier this year, I was driving through my neighborhood and I see the subdivision gardeners out there with giant hedge trimmers, and they are just whacking the roses back to nothing. And I thought, oh my word, who trained these people? But you know what? Those roses grew back, and they grew back beautifully. And so as time passed and I'm watching them, they just were gorgeous. And I thought, well, maybe it doesn't really matter because growth is compelled to happen. Growth happens and growth is inevitable. Expansion is inevitable. And I actually had this phenomenon explained to me by a practitioner a few years ago. I called her and I said, I want you to treat for expansion. And she said, good, what would you like to expand? I said, well, you know, everything. She said, could you be a little more specific? And I said, I just want expansion. And she says, Cynthia, here's the deal. If I'm your practitioner and I treat for expansion, don't come crying to me when your butt gets big. She did. She's a reverend doctor now. Can you imagine? So I thought, okay, maybe I can be a little more specific about what I want to expand. But we do. We want to grow and we want to expand and we want to do it in a good way. Lao Tzu said, the key to growth is the introduction of higher dimensions of consciousness into our awareness. Isn't that beautiful? Say with me, I introduce higher dimensions of consciousness into my awareness. I introduce higher dimensions of consciousness into my awareness. It's true, isn't it? We have the power to do that. We are the only ones who have the power to do that. How do we do it, though? By allowing our thoughts to evolve, which they do naturally. Our responsibility is to allow them to do what they do naturally. And to understand that the consciousness that created our current situation is not the consciousness that will create a better situation or a different situation. If there's anything you want to change, it is crucial to understand this basic point. If you're not happy with your current expression of life, then you have to direct your thought along progressive lines. Is there anyone here who does not want to change at least one tiny thing, one little thing? Who would like to change at least one little thing? Everybody, okay, it's unanimous. I mean, I certainly do. Some of you know that recently I decided to eclipse my current level of physical fitness. So I committed to doing an entry-level triathlon. And a little while later, I decided that within 2 years, I want to complete a full Ironwoman triathlon. Now, I knew this would entail introducing some new rigors into my workout routine, but what I did not know is how my body would respond. I just assumed that I would gradually increase the distance and the intensity, and there would be this sort of linear progression toward my goal. Yeah, easy, right? And then came the pain. Things started hurting. And they started hurting a lot. First my hip, then my knee. Until about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I couldn't take it anymore. So I went to see a physical therapist named Chris. Actually, I don't really know if he's a physical therapist. And I don't truly know exactly what he is. But it doesn't really matter because he really helped me. Now, toward the end of our session, during which he manipulated the knee and the hip and he made me cry and it was terrible and I was embarrassed. But at the end of the session, he gave me a new posture. He gave me a new posture. He said, I want you to stand up. And he looked at me and he never said, oh God, it's a terrible posture. He just moved me around kind of like this and he said, okay, good. This is your new posture. Adopt it and never ever go back to the way you used to stand. The impact on me was tremendous. It was a little uncomfortable at first because I wasn't used to standing that way, but he kept saying, this is your new posture. So I adopted it. I did what Chris said, and I had to be very deliberate at first. I had to remember the steps, like feet shoulder width apart and hips in a little bit and shoulders straight, kind of like this. So I was deliberate, and I would walk around with my hands on my hips to just kind of keep myself in the right place, and it was a little awkward. And a couple days later, Jay and I were having a conversation about a serious matter. And he said, okay, I understand, but why are you mad at me? I said, sweetie, I'm not mad at you. Why do you say that? Well, you're standing there with your hands on your hips and da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, this is my new posture. So how I stood and ran and walked before doesn't work anymore. I have to stand and walk and run in a new way that supports my new goals. Now, adopting a new posture in thought may not be as obvious as a new physical posture, but it's every bit as necessary. And I got to thinking, what if our practitioners would say to us when we go to them for affirmative prayer treatment, what if they said, this is your new posture in thought. Don't go back to the way you used to think. Adopt this and live from it. Abide by it. It would be very deliberate at first, wouldn't it? But that's good for us because we might become complacent otherwise. Now, along the way, let's say we do this. Let's say Jerry and all our other practitioners, Sherry, our lead practitioners here today, what do you think about instituting that? This is your new posture in thought. Abide by it. Live in it, okay? So along the way, we would have to take action. We would need to make choices. We would need to make decisions, and we would have to make some adjustments in our thinking. I experienced that too with the physical thing. A few days after working with a new posture, I realized I needed a new pair of shoes that would support my new stance. Now, some of you have seen my ugly little Mary Janes I've secretly been wearing. It's not these. Jane's looking at my shoes. These are fabulous, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they are so off the mark of my new posture, but I won't wear them long. So I bought corrective shoes, and I scaled back the intensity of my workouts for a while to prevent injury. And in addition, I added some exercise-specific foods to my diet. So I have certain things I eat now before I work out to give me energy, and after I work out to help the muscles heal in the process. And it's working really well. But see, manifesting our good and our goals and our dreams, it's not a one-shot deal. We continue to make choices and take action along the way. We must attend to our thoughts and allow them to evolve in the process. Now, I'm not saying we should obsess over our prayer treatments. We don't go to a practitioner, or even if we treat for ourselves, we don't obsess over the details day after day after day. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that we must attend to our thoughts so they don't face extinction. We want to see our affirmative prayer through to fruition. We want to keep our thoughts viable. Not only do we want them to survive to manifestation, we want them to exceed our imagination. See, the law of mind, divine mind, is infinite in its potential to create, but we have to give it the direction. We are the impetus. God creates. That's all it does. It doesn't care what we create or how much of it. In the Science of Mind textbook, Dr. Holmes uses the analogy of electricity. He says, you can use electricity any way you want to. You can cook the dinner or burn the house down. Electricity does not care, right? That part is up to us. And as far as God is concerned, it's up to us too. As far as law is concerned, we can do with it what we want. We can create damage or we can create our dreams. We can rest on our laurels or we can stretch toward new horizons in thought and experience. So would you rather rest on your laurels or reach new horizons? And I'm not saying we have to absolutely change. I mean, many, if not most of us, are doing really well and we're expressing a spirit and we know we're doing this. So it's not that something has to be wrong. I'm not suggesting that at all. But what I'm saying is that not changing, by definition, is stagnation. And stagnation ultimately leads to what? Extinction. My first teacher, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, used to say, I am not an historical figure, I am a current event. And early on, I adopted that as my mantra, and it's still true today. Now, yes, we are, and our teaching teaches us that we are. We're perfect right here, just as we are in this very moment, right here in this place, we are. But if we don't evolve and grow and improve, if we don't expand in a good way, we're not doing justice to the divine in us, are we? And I don't know about you, but I want to do justice to the divine in me. And we can do that. Each of us can do that in his or her own way. It's about doing it a different way, doing it a fresh new way, keeping it real, keeping it in the now. I love Reverend Christie's first song. You know, today is the day I walk away. Every day needs to be the day we walk away from whatever we were thinking or doing previously. It has to be in order to stay viable with this principle we teach. See, it's our divine birthright to express the highest and best. It is our nature to live as God in action. We're created by the one source, so we're already the fittest. We don't have to do anything. We are already the fittest. And it should be our deepest desire not only to survive, but to thrive. How about thriving of the fittest? So right here and right now, I declare that we are thriving, active, alive expressions of divine mind. And this is the truth. It's the truth of me. It's the truth of you. It's the truth of everyone. And it is absolutely wonderful. And so are you, and so it is.